bastards. I'm the only one on time. For the record, Corey said this show was going to get started at noon Chicago time, so my Griffonic ass was sitting here at noon Chicago time.
Whether we were doing the hour early or not.
The last one talking is always the late one.
Oh my god, literally.
I have audio proof that you were the last person to talk.
It's a phase of time, like from then
what
to
even
then.
Is time, man.
I mean, isn't noon like something like evening? You know, not a certain time, but you know what I mean?
Noon is the middle of the day. That's what noon is. Noon is the point in time where the working griffs of the world decide you need to get something to eat. That's noon.
It's the middle of the night and the anti-noon.
Middle of the night we call midnight. It's midnight. You have midday, midnight. So noon.
Or anti-noon.
Anti-noon. Okay. There you go. Or how
now
about
we're
night
just
noon?
Getting esoteric.
Night noon. For the noon?
For the night noon, yes.
That's right.
I do apologize,
Storm. Yes, it does look like I said for noon today. For noon. No, hang on. So what time is it for you right now, Storm?
It's 1:55 p.m.
Oh, Jesus. Flipped it. I need everybody to stop for a second, and I need the Earth to start rotating in the opposite direction for me for my brain to work right sometimes.
Oh, my God. What time zone did you think I was in?
I don't know. I was thinking noon for you, 1 p.m. for me, and it'd be fine. I'm like, wait, no, this is the time that I...
No. Noon for me is 11 a.m. for you.
Yeah.
I didn't even know what noon was, so I would just been here at the usual time.
So is right now the usual
right now.
Recording time? Not right yes. now is the usual...
Yes.
Yes. You had me. I was fucking
I'm
doing.
Sorry.
I was doing 80 mile an hour from downtown Chicago on the toll road to get here on time.
Well,
also,
don't do
if
that.
If noon is the middle
you
of
be
the...
safe than dead.
Oh, I'm not going to be dead. We Griffins are punctual.
Also, if noon is the middle of the day, shouldn't you rather eat?
Please. I immediately came home and ate. So trust me, I had food at the ready.
Yeah, okay. I just finished eating. I had eggs and bacon. Yum. Okay, so correction in all manner of aspects then. Fridays at the usual time because Core is an idiot. Is that
so
okay?
I'm going to go into my schedule again and change it again. Because Raven Standard Time operates in a different universe.
It does. It really does. I blame the Cheetos. Goddamn Cheeto portation has me all mixed up.
Oh, it's okay, Score. You're lucky we love you.
Score?
Okay.
Score?
Right. Score?
Core.
Score? Core score. Score and 40 years ago.
Exactly.
No. Score and... Yeah.
What the hell?
Uh-oh. So, right, what are
lost
we talking
fleece.
About today?
I will go to the web app. Hello?
Yes.
Hello.
I will go to the web app because fucking the death of Discord gets even worse with the disconnecting
Jesus.
Stuff. Yeah, I can solve this problem at all. I deinstalled, I reinstalled, I replugged my microphone, I did this. I spent hours in figuring out
update to the latest version that they just released?
Yeah, it automatically
updates.
My guess would be something with your ISP.
That's possible.
No, it's nothing with my ISP. It's just literally unplugging my microphone practically, and only for Discord.
Gotcha.
And it's some software shit or hardware thing. I really don't know.
Email.
It doesn't have any web app.
Email Discord support. They're actually quite helpful. They really are. I would reach out to them.
Yeah, but yeah, I will change to the web app. I tried my best, but no, it doesn't work with. Okay. Yeah, I will be right back.
Okay.
Welcome.
Eggs, bacon, and toast. Mm-hmm. Eggs, bacon, and toast. Start your day the Raven way with eggs, bacon, and toast.
But you don't eat the toast.
No, I don't.
Because you're maintaining.
This was fast. Did my quality drop or anything?
You sound fine.
A little crackly, okay. But we'll keep going with it.
Okay. Yeah, I just can't deal with this muting me every 5 minutes.
No, I don't blame you for that's really stupid and weird.
So yeah, I felt like I was rich today.
Yeah.
Because my Smarty came due for its first service. Mm-hmm. So I took it in. And what they don't tell you is most smart car service centers are attached to luxury auto dealerships. So I pull up and the guy in front of me is driving a $100,000 Mercedes-Benz. And behind me, a Porsche 911 pulls in. And I get out, and you see all these high rollers walking around with their, you know, 5 grand Rolexes and nice suits. And here I am in shorts and a T-shirt and a smart car. And yeah, I don't not fit in at all.
Oh, no, yeah. You just need to hype it up even more and get some grease stains on your shirt and have, like, do nothing with your hair. No, I'm not even kidding you. Like, do that. Make them uncomfortable.
I walk in, and the first thing they said is, smart car owner, huh? They didn't even see my car.
Oh, fuck those guys.
It's like, really? You are an asshole.
You know, don't be presumptuous. God.
Yeah. But, hey, you know, at least heavily trained technicians with only the finest quality parts are going to work on my economy car. So this ought to be interesting.
Your super economy car.
Exactly.
That's the only way super gets attached to that name. It's not a supercar in any other aspect.
No, but it does sound like a little race car because the motor's in the back and you can hear the turbocharger.
I do dig smart cars. They're cute.
Yes, they are very cute, very fun to whip around.
When playing in GTA, I like to treat the smart cars like they're little tiny footballs. Just punt them with whatever I'm driving.
Exactly. It's why we love you so much.
Fleeks, what are we doing today? Storm, what are we doing today? I just showed up. I don't know anything.
Today we are talking passionately about our passions in a very passionate way.
Ah.
That was the most unpassionate statement I've ever heard in my life.
Well, then.
It's like, that's almost as bad as, welcome to the Indiana BMV. Everyone get in line. Now okay. Serving number 57. Yeah, that's pretty much.
Okay. Then let
Bueller.
Me repeat this. Today we're talking.
Bueller.
Today we're talking passionate.
Bueller.
No, you don't get a retry now.
Go ahead.
No.
Proceed.
No, I won't be passionate the whole episode today.
No, it's fine. Go ahead.
Because you interrupted my passion.
I won't do
well,
it again.
Your passion.
Only talk like this the whole. Okay, today
so
we're
talk
talking
like a serious German. Okay,
super passionately about all.
Bueller.
And
you guys are going to hell.
Yeah, Storm. What is your biggest passion?
He walked away. He's over. He's laughing in the corner while he goes and fetches himself a beer or something.
That's exactly what I'm doing. Core, tell me what is your passion?
I wish I had a little more time to prepare because I don't know what my passions are anymore.
Oh, my passion is No, I'm just kidding. So yeah, today we are talking passionately about our passionate passions in a very passionate way and
right. Proceed.
And So everyone of us has probably some passion, some hobby they love and they could talk about like 500 hours a day. Sadly, the day only has 24 hours, and but yeah, examples for this could be, I think what we're all sharing as a passion is cooking. I don't want to make this another episode of bird food, but...
So we'll all just agree that we all enjoy cooking a lot.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
we all enjoy cooking. Except Core. Core likes cooking, but not baking, for reasons.
He's not completely wrong, and that freaks me out a little bit that he actually said that.
I really like cooking.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah, casseroles are like just throw everything that fits somehow together in a casserole, and then put cheese on it and put it in the oven for 30 minutes.
You're exactly right. And pumpkin pies. I can do pumpkin pies just fine, too.
Oh, pumpkin pies are great.
Oh, my God.
Though I never had a real American pumpkin pie, so I need to try this one out.
Casseroles are kind of like crock pots. You just put a bunch of shit together that you think would kind of work, and odds are, probably will.
Yep.
Yeah, with cheese, everything works.
Oh, exactly.
You shouldn't mix everything together because, especially if you do a fish casserole, not everything fits to fish. But meat, on the other hand,
tuna casserole is really good.
Yeah. But you need to be careful with what you add to fish. That's what I said.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
But look at us. You know, the three beaks. You know, we're all held together because of cheese. You know, this is a very cheesy relationship. And every day before the show, we all dine on different kinds of cheese. It's great. This is so cheesy.
We all have a passion that's cooking, but we're not going to talk about cooking immediately. Start talking about cooking.
Yeah. what I wanted to say about cooking, what I especially have a passion in is chili sauces, because I don't know what it is, but doing your own chili sauce is really I kind of love to get really experimental with it. I know a lot of people are not very enthusiastically about mixing chili with chocolate and stuff, but that's a thing I really love to do.
It is something I have been wanting to get into. I'm not so much for the chocolatiness in chilies. That's never been something that I enjoy. But I've always wanted to make my own hot sauce. Unfortunately, I don't have as fancy of a label maker as you do. but yeah, it's something that I've wanted to try as well. I have a whole array of hot sauces and various sauces literally above my desk. Why they're not in the kitchen, I don't know. But
oh yeah, because I love
because you gotta have that midnight bottle of hot sauce for when you want to spice up your love life.
Just be like, whoa, hey, where are you applying that? Oh my god, no.
Well, chili sauces, and some people say chili is an aphrodisiac.
No, not really. Aphrodisiac.
Oh,
aphrodisiac. Yeah. Whatever you're calling it in your silly English language.
Aphrodisiac. Okay.
Aphrodisiac. Yeah. And
Afro, like the hairstyle. Deezy, like the hip hop singer. Ack. Yeah.
Feeling ack. Ole, ole. Ole, ole.
Okay. And this is what happens if we leave a lull in between any of our speaking. Storm immediately starts singing.
Exactly.
Lol.
So, I have many passions in life. I don't know how I'm going to narrow it down.
What do you think about chili sauces, Storm? I'm very interested in your opinion about chili sauces.
My opinion on chili sauces. I like chili sauces that are spicy but have a well-rounded flavor. And I also love chili sauces that are spicy and sweet at the same time. Those are the kind that are like orgasmic to me, because I love sweet and I love spice. And if you mix it right, oh my God. Woo, it's good shit.
I think too. So sweetness can really put down the hotness a bit. For example, habanero. So I'm starting to talk about chili. Oh my god, habaneros or Carolina Reapers.
No, you got it right.
Carolina Reapers. They are very hot, but they also have a really freaking awesome taste. I can't even tell you, especially Carolina Reaper. Oh my god, this taste is just so good. But the hotness kind of prevents you a bit from enjoying it. So if you put it in a chili sauce with a lot of sugar and maybe a bit of tomato and whatever, or paprika, it starts to tackle down the hotness, like to a very pleasant level that even the hotness is perfect in combination with the taste, if that makes any sense. So you can enjoy the rich flavor of a Carolina Reaper combined with a bit of sweetness and less hotness, you know?
Aside from actually taking a bite of a Carolina Reaper, which I would never recommend to anybody except those two girls on YouTube in bikinis. What I've noticed, because I have three different hot sauces using the Carolina Reaper, and each of them have one trend in common. Each sauce is, you know, flavored to its own whatever they're trying to aim for. But the chili pepper itself, the Carolina Reaper, it hits you like a Mack truck. It hits you really hard, really fast, and then it goes away. It does not stay on your palate for very long.
Yeah. That's the thing with chilies too. Like they all have a different way to work the hotness on you. For example, a habanero is just straight up like hot, like it fills your mouth with fire for
Stays with you. Habanero, it stays with you. Of all the peppers I've tested so far, habanero seems to have the stayability. Like it sticks to your tongue and throat for the longest time. Yeah.
And ghost peppers, this hotness is starting on your tongue and it's creeping down your throat. But it kind of, despite they're being hotter than habaneros, it's a more pleasant hotness. Yeah. And then, for examples, like some Chinese Sichuan peppers that have like chili in it. Oh my god, those are brutal. They are not as hot as habaneros or something. But they are even creeping on your lips, in your face. It burns everywhere.
That's
oh my god.
I don't like. I don't like it when my lips start burning too. And there are, you can have chilies that, you know, you can be a super messy eater and get it all over your face and mouth. And it'll tingle your tongue, it'll tingle your lips a little bit, but the burning will be centered in your mouth on your salivary glands.
What I like with chilies, especially if you're making a home batch of chili. One of the things I love to add that's a little unique is I like to add cinnamon and a dash of coconut because it really creates this unique flavor that's spicy with like a twist, and just really tastes good when you do that.
That's a very Asian attempt, like India does it, as far as I know, with cinnamon and coconut milk, and Thailand, I think.
Weird.
I also like actually all my curry is made with coconut milk because I think coconut milk is a pretty great substitute for cream or for it just belongs, for example, in Thai curry or Indian curry. Like coconut milk is pretty great, especially in combination with chili. That's to come back to the chilies. Chili and coconut are a dream team, and I'm not a huge fan of coconut normally.
Neither am I. I still prefer almond milk over anything else as far as mixing goes.
Oh my god, almond milk.
Almond milk is so sweet by itself.
It's good if you aren't going into almond milk thinking it's going to taste like milk. Same with coconut milk.
What also kind of curbs my creativity when I do my own chili sauces is the fact that I always make them. There was an exception, but I normally always do them vegan because I think in a chili sauce there shouldn't. I don't make it vegan for the purpose of making it vegan, but it's just that kind of milk, meat, and other stuff doesn't really fit into chili sauces, except for honey. Honey is a really cool thing in chili sauces.
Honey is just the most versatile thing in the world.
You can do so much with it. But now you are aware there is a difference between honey you buy at the store, you know, good quality honey, and a honey sauce, right? Because, like, even if you go to KFC, for example, and you can have some honey, that's a honey sauce. There is honey in it, but they add other things to it to make it get the unique taste. It's not just pure honey.
Yeah, if I put honey in my sauces, it's like, I don't know, at least 30%. because I kind of when I put honey in my sauces, I really want you to taste the honey, because else I can just use sugar water. You know what I mean?
That's, yeah,
true.
I don't know.
Segueing into honey there, that actually creates the perfect path. One of the passions that I want to get into is actually beekeeping. I would like to try to have a hive at some point
and
produce my own honey.
Yeah.
Every year at the state fair, there is a local beekeeper who sells honeycomb, like actual, like takes slices of their hive and sells these slices at the state fair. And I've got one of them in my cupboard now. And it's nice to just, as a treat to yourself, just kind of take a bite out of that honeycomb and just chew on it for an hour. Because, one, all of the initial honey just kind of seeps out immediately. But the wax retains, because it is all just, you know, beeswax. It all just stays and retains in the wax itself. So you can be chewing on this thing of wax for probably close to an hour before the flavor actually starts to really fade away to the point it's not worth it anymore.
Oh yeah, that reminds me of in the school of further education I visited to for my in school I was in a beekeeper club, like they had bees behind
the
school.
That is the weirdest extracurricular activity I've ever heard out of a school.
I took fencing in mine.
whoa, you took fencing?
Yeah, I took 2 years of fencing in high school.
You took a rich people sport. Wow.
And seriously,
don't discriminate.
I think fencing is kind of neat. If you watch people do it, it really is an art form. It's just usually so expensive most people don't do it.
Gotcha.
but seriously, bees are like kind of cute when you keep them, like they
wonderful.
Don't even seem like pissed or something. They you think like if you go to this to this bee thing there, that they would attack you or something, but no, they are just they coexisting with you, kind of, you know what I mean? That's,
yeah,
it was kind of cool. And what you're learning about how bees live and how they move inside their comp to tell others in which direction flowers are.
They wiggle to communicate.
They dance, yes. They dance, and their dance is really complicated, and shows the direction of the sun at noon and something. And I really don't know what's how they came up with that, but somehow, yeah, they orientate themselves on the sun and on the colors, and then they dancing the sun practically. That's really fascinating.
For small beekeepers, they've got hives now, pre-built hive boxes that, to get the honey out, you literally turn a lever and it breaks the honeycombs, and very gently, so none of the bees get hurt, and it literally, all the honey just comes out of the bottom into a cup you set there, and then when you're done, you just turn the lever back, and you don't have to take it out, you don't have to disturb the bees at all if you don't want to.
Yeah, it just squeezes it.
Very low stress. Yes, very, very low stress.
And did you know, if they have an intruder in their hive, they starting to actually covering them with more bees, like all the bees jumping on this intruder, and they're vibrating so fast that they are practically cooking the intruder with vibrating energy. That's the I found
that's
it so
insane.
Fascinating.
I did not even know that. Yeah. You need to send me some articles right now.
That sounds fascinating.
I will do it after the show so I can focus.
Okay.
Like,
okay. But now I only have that to look forward to for the rest of the day. That's going to be like the highlight of my day, is bee vibrating to kill things.
Ooh, you want to get, don't make me get my buzz on. Mm-hmm.
So passions that I've had in the past, well, this one's still one that I have, is podcasting. I love podcasting, and I love communicating, and I love entertaining people. So I've kind of been getting into the twitching, like the Twitch stuff a little bit more. But even then, I still prefer the audio-only format that podcasts like offer, because I can be a little more expressive in my voice, but like my face gets weird and contorted when I'm trying to entertain people, and it's weird. But aside from this podcast, I had one I did previously, and I have one that's kind of in the pipes right now with a friend of mine. It has to do with not really movie reviews, but kind of arguing for the sake of bad movies. Like, one of us takes the stance of this movie is awful because the reasons everybody's always listed, and then one of us has to take the stance of, no, this movie's good because it offers this, this, and this.
Oh, a debate club.
Yeah, and it's over a movie that we'll have just
bad
watched.
Movie debate.
Yeah. So yeah. Imagine doing that to, like, the Super Mario Bros. Movie.
Or Birdemic.
So, yeah, Birdemic. Storm, I want you as a special guest
room.
On that one.
Sure.
The room. Did you ever see The Room?
I have not seen The Room, actually. But I'll mark that.
You
down
need
now.
To review this. But if you don't like it for how bad it is, then you're strange core. Then I don't know who I'm friend with.
No, there are good bad movies, and there are just flat out bad movies. Like Python versus Anaconda is a bad sci-fi movie, but it's good in the aspect that it's bad because it plays off of how bad it is. Versus Birdemic, which is just flat out bad, but it was trying to be good, but it was just so bad, so you don't even get the pleasure of it being a little bit self-aware.
They meant The Room totally seriously.
No, Storm,
Birdemic does glory to all bird kind, especially at the end.
To the exploding
when
kind,
the fucking yeah. when the birds were dive bombing and exploding, and then at the end when the sun's setting and you see the birds flying away. The animation was so bad, half of them weren't even flapping their wings.
They were GIFs. They were cut out.
I love this move. I fucking
love
it. Some
of them were clip art.
But yeah, bad movie are a passion I should go into more. Like there's so many bad movies that actually try to be good, but they are so bad in execution. And if you watch it with friend, you have a lot to laugh and and quotes. Even really, really bad movie quotes are like I don't know. They are good.
Okay.
I think we could easily make a show out of just an episode out of all of our favorite bad movies in itself.
I think we did this.
Yeah, probably, actually. Kind of. I think we've talked about movies and stuff before, but we haven't really gone into, like, aside from the Birdemic episode, bad movies. Another passion of mine, aside from podcasting, was very same vein as the last podcast I did, where we did beer reviews. And during the lifespan of that podcast, I sampled and rated and reviewed close to 200 beers.
You're not even untapped.
So beer used to be a very big passion of mine when I don't drink anymore, unfortunately. But at the time when I did, it was fun to really get into the flavors and the science and the methodology in which these beers were brewed. And then kind of like see how it applies as a first impression on your palate. It was not like a professional beer review thing like, oh, well, I can taste the hints of coriander and da-da-da-da bullshit. It was, what is my first impression on this beer having never had it before? Is this going to be good to a person who just likes beers for casual sake? So that was the target of that experience. Since I stopped drinking, coffee has kind of taken over the direction that I was doing with beers. Now I'm going out and I'm trying like dozens of different coffee shops all across Utah itself. I'm getting imports from, well, not imports, but I'm getting coffee mailed to me from all over the United States and trying it too. So like that's where that skill of being able to have a more refined palate has come into play, but in this regard with coffee.
Now that you're mentioning coffee, I have a huge tea collection, and especially unflavored tea and stuff like green tea is one of my favorites. Again, matcha and black tea, Earl Grey, and all the other pretty malty sorts of tea. And yeah, tea is kind of a passion for me too. Like, and oh, I can't forget to mention matcha. Matcha is just, oh my god. if it's well done, not a cheap one. Like if you ever had like a 15 euro cup of matcha, then you know what is good, in my opinion.
When I come visit Europe, you're gonna have to introduce me to whatever this magical thing you're talking about is.
Yeah, matcha is practically if you have a green tea leaf, yeah, right. And you take everything from the green tea leaf that is not the skeleton of the leaf,
so
and
you mulch it.
Makes you practically manually picking the best parts of the leaf.
Okay.
And this is why it is so expensive, because you can imagine that, like, deconstructing a leaf that has a lot of, like, branches, hard branches that you don't want in matcha, to deconstruct is just precision work.
Can you not steam the leaf to soften it up first and then kind
of... But you want to dry it afterwards, so if you steam it first, you make it wet. And even, I think it's easier to get to separate the soft parts from the skeleton if you don't soften the skeleton beforehand.
Okay, I gotcha.
That makes sense.
And yeah, okay. So unique teas are my thing, and I do not like flavored tea because... So, only natural, you know what I mean?
I wanted to ask you, I guess it's still natural, but like, what are your thoughts on the more like sweetened, simpler teas like hibiscus, and I can't even think of them.
I don't like to sweeten my tea at all.
Don't like the sugary kind of frou-frou teas at all?
No.
Gotcha.
I love tea. I actually, when Tercel came and visited me, I had him bring a bunch of different British teas, and I love it when people send me tea to try. But one of my favorite teas to try are the more sweeter variety. I also do enjoy coffee as well, but as anyone that follows my Twitter understands, my way of trying coffee is to have cream and sugar with coffee added as a flavor. Because I like
no.
the sweet.
Okay, so when you were at BLFC, Juco live tweeted me pictures of you treating your coffee, and I was viscerally sick. He counted you put 15 packets of sugar in one cup of coffee.
That is bullshit, okay?
No, bullshit.
Six is the max I go. I did not put 15. I don't know where you got that figure from.
From Juco.
I'm pretty sure your pancreas hates you.
Oh my god, his pancreas doesn't exist anymore.
I love that bird. I'm telling you, I love Juco to pieces, but he is full of shit.
it's just his pancreas is just a giant muscle by now, like producing insulin the whole day. Storm dies if he does not take sugar.
But I typically only have about one or two cups of coffee a day. That's it. So when I have them, I make sure I enjoy every last drop. But yeah, that is something I'm probably passionate about, because I really savor the beverage and really want to try things. And also, if I'm in a different area and they have a small hometown pop or soda, I'll try that.
Oh yeah.
Because that can taste really good. You know, Green River is something you don't get in a lot of the country, but it's you can get it by me, and it's actually really good.
Wait, that's seriously? Okay, I thought they only sold that in Wyoming.
No, I get Green River over here.
Okay, no, that is some of the best soda to date that I have ever had.
Oh my god, the best soda I ever had was Schweppes cream soda from Schweppes, or Squeps, however you want to call it. Yeah, Schweppes is still it's the right pronunciation, but it's SCH, and so I'm talking too much about it. So Schweppes cream soda, I had an ice-cold can in Egypt, like in the middle of the desert, and it was like the best soda I ever had. I don't know
When did you go to Egypt?
I was in Egypt multiple times, like because we had family there. We had family there, yeah, and we actually had a road trip through the desert and stuff already. And
you have family in Egypt?
Yes, yes. Like because
fascinating bird.
There, Leeks is like, I don't want to say an onion because that implies crying and sadness, but he has so many layers just to keep peeling back and peeling back.
You just casually mentioned, oh yeah, we went, you know, road tripping through the desert and stopped by a camel and waved and saw the pyramids on the way for ice cream. You know,
I never saw the pyramids.
No, hang on, pause. Important question, probably the most important question of my life. Fleeks, help me here. Which one smells worse, Bactrians or Dromedaries?
I did not smell the. I did not smell. Yeah, no.
Disappointed in you.
I don't know. I can't give you the information.
I don't even want to talk about it anymore. Let's just move on to the next subject.
This reminds me of another passion, and that is doing vacations and traveling, but not the tourist bullshit that I always call it, like tourist traps and tourist bullocks.
Right.
I'm really not into that. So it was great that there was family living in Egypt, and this also gave me some really cool experiences, stuff you should have done in your life someday and just seen. We were on a freaking Arabic marriage, and they are partying for 3 days.
Oh, damn.
And in the middle of a desert town that never saw tourists. And so me and my brother, and especially me, because I'm like super, I look super European. We were there in this little town village. And wherever we went, like 40 or 50 kids were like stalking us and looking at us and like, who are they? What are they doing? And after some time, it really started to scare us because they were all following us. Like, and I was like, I think you can't even imagine it. I don't know, but I don't know how I'd react.
You never found out why they were following you or watching you?
They were following us because we were Europeans. That was all the thing, and they were fascinated and they wanted to look at us, and we were like the best event of the year.
Because wasn't there a travel ban to Egypt like a couple, 2-3 years ago where it was kind of a nobody in or out situation? And then even beyond that, for probably the past 10 to 15 years, Egypt's been really low as far as not a place you want to travel to because of kind of the conflicts in the area.
Yeah, well, because of the Arabian Spring, because of the revolution they had. They have a very unstable.
Yeah. So, I mean,
time
to see,
right now.
To see travelers from anywhere else would probably be a very strange sight at that point, especially to generationally, like you said, these are kind of younger kids, like probably no older than 20.
The family part, we had to move from Egypt because of the conflicts there and stuff. Yeah. So but before all this stuff went down, it was really a nice place to travel. The people there are super nice. The people who want to sell you stuff are a bit annoying, but you can just say no, thank you. Like you know, like they accept that after a while.
I'm sure but they get really aggressive.
But no, for example, no matter where you go, where you went, they always had water for you. For example, because it's just integrated in the culture. You know, like if somebody asks you for water, you give them water. And
was it here we were talking about. Oh, sorry. Was it here we were talking about in Arizona? It's required by law. Like, if someone asks you for water, you have to give them water. Like, if they come to your house.
I believe Arizona requires it. I also believe Nevada requires it.
I know that Arizona requires it. I'm just wondering if we had talked about this before.
No, we have. No.
Okay, I got a bit about that, but continue, Fleeks.
They're super nice to people, especially to children. Like, what I want to say, it's really a passion of me to learn about new cultures and to see their unique things they have. You know what I mean? Like what they believe, what they do, and I think, especially today, a lot more people should actually do that.
I would love to at some point visit Egypt in my life, and I hope things calm down there, you know, not for my sake for traveling there, but for their sake, but, you know, for my sake to travel there. Storm, you might get a kick out of this, because, okay, I do remember who I was talking to about it, and So I have a coworker who is LDS, as most of my coworkers are, and he went on a mission to Arizona. And he was telling me that, you know, when you're an LDS person on a mission, people kind of instinctually just shut the door on you.
Pretty much.
I would. That's me. Same with Jehovah's Witness. Sorry, guys. I don't want to talk to you. But he said when he was down there, because they had that law, he took full advantage of it, where he would approach someone's door and try to talk to them about it. And if they tried to close the door on him, he would ask for water. Tell me that's not shitty.
That is very clever on his part and shitty all at once.
Mm-hmm. He used that to continue to talk to them about it until he got his water and they could finally shut the door on him.
It's genius.
Door-to-door
and
sales
also
of your religion is not okay.
He should have just give him like a 10-liter 10-liter thing, and here you have water, and close the door immediately.
I'd give him a little paper cup and said, "God bless, shut the door," and that would have been it.
just keep a little bottle of like room temperature water next to your door, just in case of missionaries.
Yeah, exactly. Free water.
And Comcast salesman.
Just in general. Let's see. But passions of mine, because I'm trying to think about it, and I've got quite a few. But to touch on what Core mentioned earlier, podcasting obviously is something I'm very much interested in as well. To the point, in addition to having a blast with you, Beakies, I'm planning on starting on another one with a bull friend of mine, and it's going to be a rant show where we just tackle life's problems head on in a funny way. So that's going to be funny because this guy's just absolutely twists everything.
Is it called something like Between the Bull's Horns? It's
going to be
a China shop.
It's going to be some variation of bullshit in the name and with the bird and stuff. We're working on the details, but it's going to be hilarious because every time I'm with this guy, we just constantly are just laughing our asses off. So hopefully that should turn out fun.
Do it. I'll add that to my subscribe list that's already approaching 20 podcasts now. God help me, guys. I have a problem.
that reminds me that I mentioned that in the bird life chat beforehand. There was a bird picture of a Abachi saying, I think it's time to scram, you know? That's this the scream thing. And then I said, like, time to scram sounds like a good podcast title.
For birds. Yeah, it does. It does.
I'm also having next to bird life the call and draw vodcast, like I call it. I don't know if vodcast is an official thing, like video podcast. Invented. Like
it is.
We're talking about
a thing on Twitch for sure.
There you go.
We are talking about stuff where we are drawing some challenge, you know, with Adler the Eagle, who was already guest here and is a talented animator, and he does actually the video editing, what relieves me a lot.
Yeah, that's labor intensive, believe me.
Yeah.
My favorite thing that I love doing, because, you know, traveling as well, you know, we just talked about that. I love seeing the world. My next on my to-do list is, because I've been to Australia, I've been to Canada, I've been to the UK. Next on my to-do list is go to New Zealand, visit some friends down there. Hi, TC! I'm going to go down there, visit him. And then I'm going to go with Drizzle in a couple years to Japan. So those are my next two biggies.
I have a favor to ask of you when you go to New Zealand.
Uh-oh.
Well, two favors. One realistic, one probably a little unrealistic. One, while you're down there, test their internet speeds. I want to know kind of like what their... Because Australia has horrific internet, but New Zealand, I'm told, has actually really good internet, and I want to know that for sure. And two, try to smuggle me back a kakapo. Actually, two kakapos, male and female. Don't ask questions, just please do.
I'll see what I can do. I do know for a fact that New Zealand's internet used to be horrible, but the IT companies actually worked together to get a dedicated fiber line run to the island. And ever since the fiber line's been active, their speeds have gone up quite a bit. to the point that they are better now than the Australian National Broadband Network in many areas.
Oh, good.
So they are getting better, and I will do the speed test for you.
I've fantasized for a while about actually just getting citizenship and moving down to New Zealand. It's so beautiful that I would love it down there.
I would love it down there too, and they are recruiting talent in my field as well, being IT. It's just the cost of living, particularly housing, is astronomical.
I don't doubt. It's like it's probably like the equivalent of Hawaii here.
A house, I mean, a small house in most of New Zealand is going to cost you almost $1 million for Jesus a small Christ. House. Yeah, so
New Zealand. New Zealand actually is a really great market. People who want to sell stuff should focus on, because they have a lot. They buy everything, I heard. Like, and I can even I have even my own experience. Like, I didn't even think about New Zealand a lot, but I get quite some orders from New Zealand for my shirts, for example.
Nice.
And that's like wow, there are a lot of people that want shirts. Okay,
so like, that was a weird I don't run the program on this podcast the way I should. On the last podcast I did with the beer reviews, we had an app that would kind of tell us where all of our views were coming from, and our primary audience was New Zealand, or our primary audience was America. Our second was Europe, like the London area, and third was New Zealand, which was really weird because like the rest of the world, I think Germany was fourth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Germany likes beer, I would say.
Yeah, probably.
Now, I will say that the thing I'm most passionate about, bar none, is fighting the system to help people. What I mean by that is I was born into a family where I have a mentally handicapped uncle. I've got some other close friends that are on disability because of health conditions they can't help. And I know this doesn't sound sexy or appealing, but I get a real thrill out of fighting the government to do what's right. So going to Social Security, playing the game, filling out the forms, filing the appeals, knowing where to talk to, which judge to call, and who to put pressure on to get things done. You know, most people want to pull their hair out and scream, whereas I view it like a challenge, a game, like, oh, you're going to fucking do this to me? Oh, just
you
wait
should
see what
start
I do to you.
Your own lobbying group, Storm. If you want to get political with it and actually get involved and like do some systematic changes, become a lobbyist. Unless you want to go full politician, but even then, they don't have like the power and influence that lobbyists have.
Lobbyists get the free dinner and
yeah.
No. Wait a second. It was the politicians that get the free dinner.
Yeah, it's lobbyists who, it's lobbyists who screws inviting up to the politicians.
I'm actually thinking about later in my life actually running for elected office, because I believe if you're a person of good moral character, everyone should try to help their community in some way, shape, or form for at least a couple years.
Fully support that. I'm a little heartbroken to inform you that not everybody, very few people in politics feel the same way.
Yes, understand that. And I also believe when you run for office, it should be for a short amount of time. There should be term limits, because it's meant to be a short, you do this as a public service, and then you go back to your private life.
Yeah.
And that's something I'm very passionate about. So, yeah, quality of life issues, making sure the potholes get fixed, making sure trash gets picked up, making sure that my uncle can get the help he needs. This is all stuff I'm into. I read the newspaper. I read the minutes from the city council debates. It fascinates me to see what bullshit is going on and where my money's going.
I think politics are really an anti-passion from me. Though, of course, I'm reading into politics and I'm informing myself about, because a lot of this affects us. It's just I say politics are a thing you should dive into yourself, but it's not necessarily enjoyable. It's just a necessary thing, you know.
Yeah, I completely agree. I was just going to say, to add on to that I think America has kind of learned that lesson over the past 2 to 3 years, where we kind of like we all got very lazy as far as political awareness goes. And then as of the, you know, recent events that have been happening in America, we've gotten a little overcharged with it. We've gotten a little too passionate, whereas we don't know everything that we should be so passionate for.
Yeah, suddenly everyone is into politics.
But they don't know everything, and I'm going to fully admit that I don't know the half the stuff that I should know about it.
The thing is, guys, and this is what I tell people that say are like fleeks and don't really like politics. This is what I tell people. You know, let's say you don't like the guy in the White House, you don't like Congress, if you're an American. That's fine. Don't pay attention to them for the moment. Focus on your local community, because what your local government does, what your local school system does, is going to affect you more than what's happening in Washington. Even though, yes, Washington will eventually affect you, your local government has more control over your daily quality of life.
Absolutely.
And I'll tell you what's real fascinating is taking the emotion out of it for a moment, because it's very emotional. But all of these school shootings we keep having, eventually there is going to be legislation passed to address this. And figuring out what that legislation is going to be is fascinating, depending on which side of the political spectrum you're on. Because nobody has the answer. Nobody. So it's interesting, because we're really testing our democracy right now as to what we're going to do about this. I'm passionate. I love this stuff. So get involved.
Yeah, I'm not very passionate. I think passion is something that brings you joy. And seriously, politics make me only angry. And that's the problem.
Like Storm was saying, you got to remove emotion from it. You got to tackle it from a logic-only standpoint. But people get so fired up that they take anything that is not to their ideology as a personal offense.
You can't get emotions out of politics, because ethics and ethics, I don't know how to pronounce moral and stuff, and politic, you can't only look at some stuff in a logical way. You have also to consider just humanity, you know what I mean? Like,
you can get passionate about sometimes. It, you can get heartbroken about it, but to get angry about it is going to be more deconstructive every single time.
I don't mean when I said angry, I didn't mean I'm getting insulting to people and stuff. I'm just like this is not right. Well, what that happens is not right, and this personally conflicts with my moral and stuff. And and actually, politics aren't fun for me. That's what I wanted to say.
Most people do is they get angry. They don't.
Right. But this is by design. And what I mean by that is there was a point in time in our country's history in the United States where you could sit down with your neighbor and have a honest debate over something and go out for, you know, a nice steak dinner afterwards and laugh and be friends.
Nobody would want to shoot each other.
Right. But what we've done now, and this is partially because of some outside influences as well as a change in our culture thanks to Facebook and this always connected generation, and that now you know, we've gone from I can respect your differences because you're still a fellow citizen and we can work through this, to let's put emotion into it and divide and conquer. And by keeping us more and more divided, the ruling class, if you want to look at them like that, the people with the money, they get to do whatever the fuck they want. So it's real interesting.
Not for long, though, because the more passionate and riled up they make, you know, I agree to some extent what you're saying there with, you know, dividing us does only cement their power a bit more. But they are, in that division, they're also creating hostility and anger. And pretty soon, all of that disdain is going to be pointed towards them.
Correct. Look no further than, no matter if you're, you know, Democrat or Republican, and when we've had in our lifetime,
this has happened over and over again throughout history.
Yes. And in our recent history, we've had, even once again, if you're Democrat, Republican, doesn't matter. We've had super majorities of Republicans and super majorities of Democrats running Congress and the presidency. And they have still failed to pass large, meaningful legislation easily, even though their party controlled everything. Yeah. So that should go and show just kind of what's going on with the country.
from Greece and Rome up until our recent, well, more recent civil war, to the civil rights movement, to what we're facing now with the transgender rights and LGBT rights movements.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, Fleeks, I'm going to toss this to you for a second, because I read something fascinating about Germany the other day. And that is, you guys have a debacle on your hands in Berlin with your international airport. That is like a source of national embarrassment for you guys.
Yeah, I think it will be finished as soon as we can create an raft in time, and actually people even say it's built on an old Native American graveyard, so it's cursed. So I'm not too deep into it, but it's legislations about fire safety that keeps them from finishing.
Airport, as far as I know. Correct me if I'm wrong, Fleeks, but the thing about the airport, you know, Corey, if you're not familiar, is, you know, Germany, the Germans have a culture of, you know, very good engineering. They just think things through. Everything's meticulously planned. Yet somehow at the airport, the fire system was wrong. The roof leaked. The doors didn't shut right. The escalators didn't have enough steps to finish. It was just one disaster after another.
The problem are exactly legislations, because
they contracted it out to Americans. No, not really, but still.
The problem is they planned it, they built it, and it doesn't go conform with safety laws, like fire hazard laws and hazard laws, and you know, it's a lot of things that comes together, and it will open eventually, but it's a giant project, and everything that could go wrong went wrong, and I'm not informing myself much about this, but it's already an insider, a running gag in Germany, practically.
Exactly. That's basically years of poor government oversight, because you had contractors and subcontractors not talking to each other, and it's just basically poor project management 101. But that's what happens in large government projects. The politicians don't hold people accountable. This is why an informed citizen is so important.
I mean, in Germany, we also have like half finished bridges, for example.
Like bridges.
Yeah, they built it somewhere in southern Germany. They built a giant bridge, like it was a giant project, but this bridge doesn't have a ramp, and they won't even finish the bridge. It's just there now, like millions. Billions of euros went into this project, and they won't finish it, no.
So, no matter where you live, every country has its interesting projects and challenges, and that's what makes life so fascinating. Yeah, but besides that, the other thing that gets me riled up, that's gotten me riled up since I was just, you know, a little grifflet, and part of the reason I am named what I'm named, is the weather. Storm chasing, tornadoes, hurricanes. I love the weather. I love tracking them on radar. I love when warnings go off. I get excited. It's fascinating to me. I just love severe weather, even though sometimes it causes me to have to fix things on my house. It's just, I love it.
So really quick, just jumping back to bridges really quick. I just figured this would be a fun fact. 9.1% of the United States bridges are considered structurally deficient.
Correct.
56,000 bridges in the U.S. are not considered even remotely up to par with what they should be. And they're still
That doesn't mean they're going to imminently collapse, though. Structurally deficient just means that it is not being used for the purposes of which it's designed. And the most common cause of that is it's overloaded, because traffic patterns have increased and there's so much demand, the bridge can't handle adequately the load on it anymore. And that is because in our country, what Americans are really good about, what we fucking rock at in the United States, is we build awesome, shiny new things. Buildings, new roads, new this, new that. It looks fucking great. But after it's there and exists, when it comes time to maintain it and cough up the money, we'll wait. Like in my case, my city next door, Hobart, it took a car falling through the road, literally through the fucking road, and they had to get a crane to get it out for them to start fixing the potholes in the road. So
more or less the mindset is we build these wonderful structures, and then when they are deficient and when they're no longer up to code, instead of, I mean, we do have restorations happen, but only on like the most historical buildings. Otherwise, right. They just get deconstructed and something new put in their place.
That and, you know, infrastructure spending isn't sexy because most of it is just, okay, you paved the road. Okay, you fixed a leaking water pipe. Most of the time it's, you know, it's just shit that people don't really see or, you know, they drive through mindlessly. But trust me, when public infrastructure goes wrong, you know, you intimately know because it affects you.
Yeah, I'm well versed with city planning because I played a lot of SimCity and
oh, I love that game.
So today we learned that we're also very passionate about city infrastructures. This is a new blossoming hobby for us.
To continue with our passions that are not bridges. I think. I don't know if you like.
Well,
Bridge Builder. Oh my god, it's such a good game.
I loved that game. I played that game in middle school. We had to build a working bridge within certain specifications.
I think my Freaks bridge was more or less wiggle. Talking about the 2016 like a Bridge Builder app slash game.
Holy Bridge.
Where people would make like springboard bridges to launch cars to the other side of the map.
But with a lot of safety gaps.
Yeah, exactly.
They actually had something like that. That was this educational program in 2006. That was funny. And literally, a dump truck would hit my bridge, and it would wiggle as it crossed. It was hilarious, but it didn't collapse.
I remember our project was we had what was basically the size of Jenga blocks, and as a class, we all had to build a bridge that was structurally sound enough to roll eggs from one side to the other.
Did you guys have to build earthquake buildings by chance?
Yes. I think that was a very brief project in middle school.
I had to build one out of toothpicks, and mine was only one of, out of a class of 30 kids, I was only one of four that didn't collapse. So I still have that fucking thing. My mom's like, why didn't you trash it? And I'm like, no, it's a source of
pride. No, every time I try to trash it, it rebuilds itself. It's that structurally sound. It just shows back up on the desk.
You can't throw it away. Every time I throw it out of the window, it suddenly stands on my table again.
Exactly.
Somebody call a priest and an architect. We need to dissect this thing.
Exactly. I put it together. The stuff from high school. It's good stuff.
A new passion I kind of dived in is storytelling and story writing, world building and stuff. That's something I got in contact with another story writer, and because of them, I started writing like English stories, because somehow it's easier for me to write in stories in English. I don't know if I feel in German it feels so clumsy. I don't know, and in English it feels more smooth. I don't know if it makes sense from an American perspective.
This is just me. What is the term? Projecting, but maybe it's because German is not as passionate. Well, I mean, it's definitely passionate, but it's not as like emotional of a language, whereas English is kind of very emotionally based.
What I notice is that you can write way more flexible with German, because we can build our own words. We can put words in the beginning that you of the sentence that don't belong there in English sentences, because in English you have more unflexible sentences. The words have a certain a certain order you have to put them in English to work. You know what I mean? You can say he is a bird, but if you say a bird he is, it sounds kind of strange in English, I guess.
It sounds like you're speaking like Yoda if you do that.
Yes, but it's the same as here I am versus here am I. I mean, they're both grammatically correct, but one just sounds a little bit weird.
In Germany, you're more flexible with grammar. That's what I want to say.
Read the old Lord of the Rings book it's still English, but the way they structured their sentences back then might as well be a foreign language to us.
It's true. Now. Sorry, Fleeks, I missed what you said there.
Yeah, in English, I think... About grandmas? No, grammar.
Grammar, yeah, okay. See, I totally missed it.
I'm not sure if German grandmas are more flexible than English grandmas. But definitely well, what I noticed is German grammar is way more flexible than
if we
English
find
grammar.
Who's into it, we can just put them to the test.
If you're not Shakespeare, you can't invent new words in English too. And you can, but you can invent new words in German, like if you wanted to. Like if you miss a word to describe something in German, you can just put two words together to form it.
Brand new nouns, exactly. Just like that.
In German, the one thing about German to me is it always sounds like they're angry. I don't know why. It sounds like you're angry all the time.
It's the hard vowels. They've got lots of hard vowels.
And then sometimes you laugh, and it's like, oh, you weren't angry. You were happy. This is so confusing.
Clichés aside, I noticed that when I write in English, I often bring in Germanisms, and this writer I met actually helps me with editing. I practically have an editor now. Like I can write my stories.
Nice.
And this means I will probably write some, for example, Bedania related stories that will help me a lot to finally start with the comic, like in a coherent way, you know, and to structure my things and stuff. And the other thing that really catapulted me into storytelling and character creation was a Dungeons & Dragons round with Eclipse as a game master and developing my own character in the story and telling him the background story about this character and having him excited about it really motivates someone. And D&D is really fun.
Of the writers I've met, a good number of them have cited D&D as kind of being their like start and their foray into it. Like, yeah, I kind of got my passion for storytelling while I was playing such and such games and, you know, building and creating these worlds and overarching stories. And then I just kind of took the story we had for that game and kind of published it into something else. And that's
it's an inspiration. Kankus, kind of some parts of the Kankus. I kind of...
Careful there. That sounds like a racist think word about, almost.
Kankus are the bird persons. Are thieferish bird...
Gotcha.
Yeah, in D&D, they are birds.
That could be an avian slang word for something, I'm sure.
And what I wanted to say is that their culture and stuff kind of influenced me more, gave me more ideas what to actually do with the avian sapiens in my Berdania story, practically. Did we do the intro, by the way?
No, I was actually just about to point that out. I was going to say, okay, guys, we're about an hour in. Do we want to move on to questions and possibly the intro?
I have a passion for good intros.
I want to do my one final thing.
Yeah, go ahead, Storm.
Yeah, we can do that. Okay. My one final thing that I am passionate about that seems outright ridiculous is when you take...
Clock chimes.
Clock chimes. When you take an average item and you absolutely do something crazy with it. Case in point, someone I know took a Prius, took out... and completely redid the engine bay and ended up turbocharging a motor and throwing a motor in there to make it get 800 horsepower.
Sleeper cars.
Insane. Another thing, like,
sounds like you're talking about life hacks. Right.
So particular thing is called sleeper cars, and that is just the hobby of putting overpowered engines in the bodies of cars that you would not expect to be able to go suddenly 120 miles an hour.
Like those three-wheeled cars that you sometimes see on the street.
We don't have those here for safety reasons.
Yeah, did that look like you're driving a cardboard?
Yeah, we don't have those. I know what you're talking about, but no, we don't have.
Okay.
Those.
We have them here.
Yeah, it's interesting to see how that got past safety regulations, to be honest with you. But, well, I guess it's because they consider them a motorcycle.
Oh, yeah.
Motorcycle with a built-in sidecar, all in one box.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
So creating stuff, unusual stuff from unusual stuff, you know, that kind of reminds me that I also have a passion for merchandise design. Like, I like to create merchandise, like, and especially, like, I'm always looking for unusual ways to do that. And, for example, I'm at the moment, I'm developing some Burdania passports and try to figure out how to do safety things on them. How are they called? Security checks on them.
Watermarks and things.
Watermarks and stuff. Yeah. And I'm trying to figure it out at the moment. And I love this process of coming up with unusual solutions.
Mm-hmm.
Like for example, I'm experimenting with a tin foil, for example, because it can, if I laminate it, I could kind of laminate a stripe of some silver paper or tin foil into it and stuff. And that's those experiments for example, I wanted to a friend brew a beer a while ago. And we wanted to put it in the Euroferns art show, and I wanted to create a bit of merchandise for it. And then I came to the idea, because I kind of wanted a simple, shiny framed picture. And I came to the idea that I print the motif that was a vector graphic, that I put this motif on an overhead foil. Like, you know, those projectors, that daylight projectors, where you put a foil on it. Mm-hmm. And I printed this motif on an overhead foil and put a shiny paper behind it, and it looked so good.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, this is how you can get creative with merchandise.
Absolutely. And then after you figure out how to do it and figuring out how you can repeat that, mm-hmm. that's half the battle too. But I think the thing you were referring to, Fleeks, earlier, the motorcycle thing, is called a tuk-tuk.
Tuk-tuks. Yeah.
they don't pass road safety here, but man, are they're supposed to be kind of fun to be in. They're supposed to be a hell of an experience. So.
Are they the ones with two wheels in the front, one wheel in the back, or vice versa?
They can go vice versa, but some of them have enclosures, and in many countries they use them for small parcel delivery or like a small taxi too.
Okay, I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We used to use them here for USPS delivery, actually.
Oh boy.
Tuk-tuks, yeah. So something like that, yeah, yeah. And just imagine building in a rocket engine into those. That would.
Oh, God.
Stick a V8 in it. Just.
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to hook a V8 up to a merry-go-round and just see what happens.
Yeah.
Anyways, so we are now definitely over an hour in. Do we want to move on to questions?
Yes, we should move on to the intro and then questions.
This is episode 67 of Bird Life. I'm Core.
I'm sorry. I'm Fleeks.
And I'm Storm, the punctual, always on time Griffin.
Cue intro.
A beacon of hope is pointed up. The pride we cry. Horizon ahead we spread out. We play the sky. The dinny of the dinny of going to the dinny of the dinny of the dinny of the river. The dinny of the dinny of the dinny of going to the dinny of the dinny of the dinny of the river. The dinny of. Always be peeping.
Okay, now for questions.
First question comes from Moriar. The question is, are transgender birds called trans hens and trans cocks rather than trans women and trans men?
You refer them to what they prefer to be called.
Yes. They tell you. They will tell you.
Yes, that is the safest way to do it, though I will give Moriar full credit. Trans hens and trans cocks is pretty creative. my opinion.
It looks sexy too. I kind of like it.
Yeah, I completely agree. Peter Corkley asks, how do griffins wear shirts?
Okay, so I saw this question, and I visualized in my head, they put a string through each armhole, and then they just tie the string around their neck and wear the shirt like a necklace.
I just imagine...
Or if you Storm, loincloth.
Yeah, Storm only wears a loincloth, but if you're wearing a shirt, I imagine you can... You can put it on over the front of your chest and then tie it on the back around the wings. So that way your wings can
I will show you how griffins wear shirts. I can only visually show you, but I will explain it soon. Just give me a second to find the Discord again. That's how griffins wear shirts.
That's a tuck tuck. Oh, there we go. Aww.
Yeah, I just posted the one picture of Maristic where her tiny griffin slides underneath the shirt of her husband. I think it was her husband, and yeah,
that's
how they worship
the stupid cute exactly. comic. Yeah, we've all seen it.
Okay. Next question comes from Drezzle. Hey, I know that guy. Question is, how do you tell creepy birds that their tail is small and you don't want to smash face to face without hurting their feelings? Well, that's an interesting question.
You don't tell birds that their tail is small.
You know what? Some birds are showers and some birds are growers, okay? It isn't until they fan their tail that you know it's true size.
That's true, yeah. And if their tail, why would you tell a bird if their tail is short? I mean, unless the bird asks you, do you think my tail is too short? And then you make sure you always lie, because the bird's setting you up for a bad time.
Then you last I checked, then your you name isn't say, Becky.
all bird tails, if small, or if you have a giant peacock tail, if you have giant peacock tail feathers, they're always beautiful. Yeah, all birds have beautiful tail feathers. I just want to mention that.
Yes.
I couldn't agree more, Felix. Couldn't agree more. Eclipse Griffin asks, "Has science gone too far?"
In regards to.
Yeah,
we can't qualify.
We can't.
Just in science general, has science gone too far? No, not quite, but we're almost there.
Never. They never
Until go science gives me a pill or a shot that would allow me to change into my true bird, no, it has not gone too far.
And then when that has happened, it has gone far too far. Change him back. Oh, God, please change him back. He looks horrible. It's like an amalgamation of some skinwalker.
Actually, I was expecting
you. You and I were going to have a conversation in the office when we're done with this. Yeah.
I actually expected the other question from Eclipse for a second.
Which question would you like to ask? The Passions one?
Yes.
Okay. Eclipse Griffin asks, what is the difference between passion and obsession?
That's a really great question, and that's why I really hoped you would pick it. What is the difference between? I think the difference is a scream. If you have a passion, you're happy about you're just passionate about it. That's if you have an obsession, you annoy everyone with it. I guess like if you're going so far that your life turns around this one passion you have. That's an obsession then. I think
passions and obsessions can be different in the regard of what does it give back? What do you get out of it? So can you be obsessed with video games? Yes, very easily. Can you be passionate about video games? Yes, very easily. But the difference between the two of them is one uses it as an escape for their entire life. The other enjoys it and has something productive of it. So like video game reviewers or people who have made careers and hobbies out of, you know, their video game content, that would be a passion versus someone who just binges for days on end. That would be an obsession.
I agree. An obsession is very similar to basically to an addiction almost. A passion is something that generally is positive, that generally will drive you to do something you enjoy, do it well, and if not, also allow you to lift people around you with it. Whether it's, you know, being an outstanding car mechanic or a comic book collector and showing your collection to people, things of that nature. Really, the passion is generally positive, whereas obsession reaches an unhealthy level to the point it affects your quality of life.
Right.
Yeah. Obsession is mostly not healthy. Yeah, that's what I... And a passion is... I would say a passion is a healthy obsession, and an obsession is an unhealthy passion.
There we go.
Critically.
That works. You know, Eclipse actually said something on this, and he said, under the bird passions hashtag we posted, I've generally been scared of my own passions, but I only... But only because I've seen too many people shoot others down. I don't get it. I may not understand a passion, but I love when people are passionate about something. They have a spark that refuses to die, and I think it's beautiful. I could listen to someone talk about baseball for hours, even though I have no interest in the sport myself. I just never want to see someone's passions crushed simply because they are different or not mainstream.
Oh, yeah, that's something that annoys me too. This person likes something I don't like, so
or they
he
like
should
it
stop
wrong.
Liking it.
They don't like it the same way I like it, kind of thing.
Yes.
So in that regard, Storm and coffee.
Yes.
You know, I give you shit about how much sugar you add in your coffee all the time. I get a lot of shit for drinking my coffee black. People like say,
what?
Like, how can you drink it black? It's sludge. It's bitter. It's gross. How can you do that?
It's like, the only way to drink coffee. Everybody who drinks it different isn't.
Please shut that beak. Shut that beak right now.
But that's just it. Like, I'm only giving Storm shit about it. Yeah. Personally, I think adding a ton of sugar to it does really kind of, to me, make it sludgy and gross. It adds a texture I don't like to it. It takes away from the actual flavor and roastiness of the coffee. But on Storm's side of the argument, coffee is too bitter for his palate. Coffee, well, maybe not too bitter, but maybe just the bold flavor of coffee does not have an appeal to him, so he needs that amount of sugar.
I understand that people sweaten it. But I personally think that coffee doesn't taste good anymore.
Please don't sweat in my coffee.
Yeah, sweetened. That's people sweet.
I will tell you this. I will tell you this, Fleeks. It depends on the roast. And what I mean by this, to give Core some credibility here, because he's even though he's a raven, I'll forgive him on that, he's pretty close on this. And that is that some roast, some beans of coffee, for example, you know, Dunkin' Donuts coffee, I only need to put in about 5 cream and sugar in that. Tim Hortons coffee, I only got to put in some cases, only 3 cream and sugar. It depends on the coffee. Some have such a good flavor that I don't need to add much sugar to complement it. It just varies.
If I'm honest, I appreciate in coffee what I appreciate on IPAs, and that's the bitter aroma of, be it the hop or the roasting of the coffee beans. And the sugar kind of takes this fine bitterness I appreciate away.
Okay, and that's fine.
It's in the same way that the sugar and stuff will take away from the hot of spicy chili peppers.
Yeah.
Yes, but you know, just like we were talking about how we should not ever put someone down for their
you
passions.
Did not let me talk. You did not let me talk. I wanted to make a comparison. But some people though may like, if you come back to IPAs, for example, they may not like the bitterness. They may more like the flower or the flower, like flowers, you know, not flower, the, or they may like the maltiness, or they may like everybody has other aspects he likes on something. Or, and that's the comparison I wanted to make. Not saying that everybody who doesn't like IPA bitterness is not sophisticated or whatever.
Or maybe I never liked IPAs because I never put cream and sugar in them. I might have missed out on a whole aspect of something here.
Anyways, don't be a gatekeeper. Don't tell people they can't like something because they don't like a certain aspect of it, or they criticize some other aspects.
Exactly.
You maybe like. Don't be a gatekeeper. Don't say you can't look you can't watch the anime if you haven't read the manga. You know, there are people like
I
that.
Only
like
watch it in dub, not sub, or sub, not dub. Want to hear
so
that?
Only okay. Listen, if you got someone that's in a passion that you're in as well, and you think they're doing it ass wrong, if you just shut your mouth and keep an open mind, it's amazing how they may actually show you something you didn't know. And
it's
you'll
amazing
learn
how having an open mind works.
I know.
And it's free.
And we're not all perfect. We're like, we all have our faults in this. Like,
yeah,
sometimes
course,
you don't realize you're being closed-minded until someone goes, hey, dude, like, maybe just consider this for a second.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good point.
So we have any more questions?
We have two more.
Okay.
Okay, you guys ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Peter Corkley asks, what is the best way to clean up all the feathers after a party?
Vacuum cleaner.
Next.
Vacuum cleaner works, or if they're big feathers, you can use a rake.
Or if they're big feathers, you keep them and make ornaments out of them.
Yes.
Oh, no, or you use them as pillows. Or
yeah, then you're going all Nifrian and sell your own feathers at some point when you see, hey, it's lucrative.
Rumor has it, if you list your used feathers on Callbay, you can make lots of money because there is a market for used feathers. Just don't ask what they're used for. All right. And the final question of the day comes from Mel. Mel asks, do you take the communal bird rendezvous potted plant? I know exactly what he's talking about. Okay, I'm going to try this question again because I just bastardized it. The question is, do you take the communal bird rendezvous potted plant with you guys to every con you go? Just asking what we should look out for and where and what time and the passphrase. What he's referring to is at Motor City FurCon, yeah, we had the bird plant, okay? And all the birds would congregate to it. It's how we started our meetings. It's how we plotted world domination. It's where you went when you wanted a mutual preen. It was a wonderful place to be.
Apparently, so Zolgus basically lived by the tree and may or may not have taken it home with them. So get in touch with Zolgus about, you know, next convention that they're at, where the bird tree is going to be.
Zolgus did indeed take part of the tree. I know that to be a fact for reasons I won't mention. But what to look for at each con is this. There will always be a migratory bird meeting place at every convention you go to. Generally speaking, it's either by a really pretty tree or a bird picture. Case in point, Biggest Little Fur Con was just there. Without pre-planning it, without saying anything about it. Next to the elevator banks, there was a bathroom area with a little waiting area in front of it and a giant owl picture. And without saying a damn thing, every time we birds were going to get together and do something, everyone met by the owl picture. So trust me, use your bird instincts, look for the prettiest tree or the best bird picture in con space, and that'll be the bird meeting place.
And it's unspoken for a reason. We don't want the others to know and start hanging out with the birds.
I have a very good meeting place for birds at EF now, because in front of the hotel there's actually some light, some artwork of Zeus having sex with Venus as a swan.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Okay, you know what? You just fucking sold me. I'm going to this con now. Say no more. This is happening.
Yeah, there's a swan having sex with Venus.
Welcome to Europe, where swans get fucked.
right in front of a hotel.
No, the swan does the smashing.
Yeah, Zeus transformed into swan in order to woo Venus, as far as the mythology goes. God damn it, Zeus. And isn't that how Athena was created or something?
Athena
burst out of his head. I don't even know how that one worked out.
Party all the time.
We got to have a Greek history episode.
We do.
Yeah, let's drag Eclipse into that to tell us about Greek griffin mythology. I mean, he knows about mythology birds. Mythology birds. Soon delivered to your doorstep. Mythology birds. 3? Almost.
All right, Greek, we're an hour and a half in. Should we wrap up?
Yep. Time to conclude this episode of Bird.life.
Okie dokie.
Yay. Make a conclusion, Core. I'm concluding this was a good show.
You're putting all the pressure on me, man. I don't know what to do. If you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Stitcher, or via the RSS feed. You can also subscribe. Fleeks, you put me on the spot. Now I'm panicking.
If you enjoy the episode and you want to donate some shinies to help us keep the lights on and the party going, make sure to visit our Patreon.
Thank you, Storm. Patreon.com/birdlifepodcast.
You also find the link on our beautiful website, bird.life.
Yep, just kiss the bird.
And if you didn't like the episode, then send a complaint letter to Storm.
That's right. The official complaints department for this show is Storm. Just message me at Storm Griffin, and I will be happy to take your feedback to make the show better while telling you to squawk off.
Actually, technically, the complaints department box is literally Storm's butt.
Yes.
We just shoved the complaint letters right up there.
It trust me, it gets handled with the same degree of care as it would if you send it to my face.
Anyways, thank you so much for joining us, and remember, always be beeping.
Always be beeping.
Always be preening.
Name this species of bird, and I'll give you a shout out on the next episode. Good luck.